May have to wake you up after that hymn, huh? I'm sure we all have our favorite hymns, right, in the hymn book. Do you have any that are not favorite hymns? Okay, good. Good. As we approach the Passover, the topic of sin is an appropriate one to cover, isn't it? I suppose we could save a lot of time, or maybe an hour, a little less than an hour, by just saying we're all against it. Am I right? But when it comes down to dealing with our own lives, you really can't be just that general. You can say, I'm against sin of any kind, but we go through a process, and we'll be going through that process. If we haven't started already, there's no prohibition against starting early on that process, in which that process helps us to learn more about ourselves, hopefully, than we knew before. And not only that, but it is a process that spurs us to action regarding the topic of sin. And most people I've found in just conversation and in counseling and in talking with members through the year, and obviously my own experience, we see some of the same problems, or that's an easy way of describing sin, calling it a problem. A problem doesn't seem like it's that big a deal. Sin is worse than that, but we call sins problems, but we're talking about the same thing. And sometimes those things remain. But hopefully you see progress year by year too. And that should be a positive reinforcement that you're in the right place, pardon me, and that you're doing the right things. Today we'll review some of the specific areas of sin that are sometimes easily overlooked. We might call them problems. We might call them problems of society, and they're part of the human condition. Sometimes sin can be viewed almost as normal because the behaviors are so common. But we are called to do something on a higher plane and a higher level. Well, you're aware of the general biblical definition of sin, which is found in 1 John 3:4. It's a memory scripture, I'm sure, for many people. Pardon me. 1 John 3 and verse 4 in the Old King James, whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness. Or that's the New King James, pardon me. The Old King James Version said, whoever committeth sin transgresseth also the law, for sin is transgression of the law. So the biblical definition of sin is breaking the law, all of the law. And that's one of the things that we reviewed throughout this time. And that process of examining ourselves to see where we are in that spectrum. Now turn to Matthew chapter 5, because there are some things that are fairly easy to pick out in life and identify as sin. Not just a problem, but a sin, breaking the law. But in Matthew 5, Christ introduced in the Bible a higher level of evaluating sin and what sin really is. I'll begin in verse 19. Who therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven, but whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. There was a higher level of conduct required of disciples of Christ. than of the scribes and the Pharisees, and Christ said that they did obey the law to a certain level, to a certain extent. But the righteousness of a Christian must exceed that. And then it's further amplified. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. So there is a higher level of conduct. It's not just what is on the appearance and what is out in front and what can be judged by the five senses. And then Christ gives information about personal relationships and how to handle some of the problems that men have with other men and women with other women. And throughout the rest of this chapter, there are other amplifications of the law and what really defines sin. In verse 33, again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but you shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no, for whatever more than these is from the evil one. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. Whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other to him also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those that hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. And throughout the rest of the New Testament, there's amplification of these various injunctions by Christ in the Sermon on the Mount. Let's turn to 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 24 and take a look at a modern application of this particular passage, which is found again in 1 Timothy 5:24. Get it? You current events individuals will recognize the alliteration. Verse 24, some men's sins are clearly evident, preceding them to judgment, but those of some men follow later. There are some things that are very easily evaluated because they're out in front. The modern application that I was going to use is that in the previous presidential campaign, there were things that were so outrageous by candidate Trump that things either he said or did or things that he said in the past that were so outrageous that they almost certainly spelled doom for his candidacy, yet somehow he survived. I think maybe one of the reasons that those things that he said that people recognized may have been wrong or maybe did wrong, in a way they recognized, you know what? That's what we see on the surface of this individual, but in reality, when you get down to it, a lot of people have probably thought or said the same things. Not that they excused the wrongdoing, but that they saw that, you know, that's what everybody really is like deep down inside. It's just that with all the bluster, it just is out in front. And I think that probably we can all relate to that. Not that we excuse bad behavior, but we all recognize that there's probably somebody that we know or somebody that we have met in life in which there's no doubt that that person is guilty of whatever. You know, sin is sin is sin, right? But there are some things that are never exposed to the light of day. But since sin is sin, it doesn't really matter because all have sinned and transgressed the law. Whatever is the case with us as individuals, we are coming to the time in which self-evaluation is a very important part of our lives. And it's our duty as we approach the Passover to examine ourselves. Now, going back to Exodus chapter 12 is the first mention of leaven in the Bible, and the introduction then of this type, this spiritual, this physical spiritual type. It's mentioned a number of times in Exodus 12. The entire lesson isn't given there in Exodus 12, but it's the beginning point. And then the rest of the lesson comes in the New Testament, under the New Covenant, and is explained. But I'll just pick out one verse in Exodus 12, that's verse 15, where it says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. Now, there's a type being given here. Unleavened bread was to mean something. Didn't mean much to them. Just meant that they didn't have time to have the bread raise before they escaped from Egypt. But on that first day, you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. So there are two types that are given, two very special lessons. And the process that we go through during the time of the year of the days of unleavened bread, and just prior to that time, quite honestly, the process must begin. Try to amplify that a little bit. But we see that unleavened bread is an important symbol, and leaven is an important symbol for a Christian. It really was not that meaningful to those individuals there in the Old Testament. They were given to us as a beginning point as our examples. But turn to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew 16, beginning in verse 5. Where this type of leaven is, leaven and unleaven is brought out. Now, when his disciples had come to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. Then Jesus said to them, "Take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." At first, they didn't know what this meant. And they reasoned among themselves, trying to figure out this pithy saying of Jesus, and thought, "Oh, we didn't bring any bread. Is there a lesson there because we forgot to bring bread?" And Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, "O you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you've brought no bread? Do you not yet understand or remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up, nor the 7 loaves of the 4,000 and how many large baskets you took up?" So on 2 separate occasions, having bread was not an issue. It was not a problem because a miracle took place and there was food left over, even though there wasn't enough food to begin with. So how is it that you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning the bread, but to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees? Then they understood he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. So their teaching. But what was it about their teaching? Because in Matthew, in chapter 5, we've already said the implication is already made that they were righteous, but a righteousness needs to exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. So what was it about their teaching or their doctrine that was sinful? In Mark chapter 8, in verse 15, I'll interrupt that thought. and ask you to turn there in Mark chapter 8 and verse 15, because it's amplified just a bit more. Mark 8 and verse 15, this addition. Then he charged them, saying, "Take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." So two distinct groups. Now hold your thoughts. Don't hold your page. We'll turn to 1 Corinthians or 1 Corinthians, for those of you that 1 Corinthians 5. You know, when Donald Trump said that, I don't know if it was 1 Corinthians or 1 Timothy or whatever it said when he went to the Baptist College or Liberty University when he was, you know, I think a lot of people laughed at that who knew the Bible and knew that it's first, second, whatever the case may be, but they excused it because at least he tried to come in on a level that they might be familiar with. But anyway, 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 6. Speaking to the Corinthians, Paul said, "Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened," or without sin. "For indeed Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us." So through the process, partaking of the Passover symbols, the renewal of the Passover symbols, acceptance of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ in our lives, we're clean. We're without sin. But we're told that therefore let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Now, the expression of malice and wickedness can be hidden from plain view. The results of malice and wickedness can be awful, can be horrible when they're acted out upon. But it's within the mind that those thoughts occur, and we are responsible to overcome those thoughts as well. So, leaven is shown to be a type of sin, and unleavened bread is shown to be a type of righteousness. Now in Galatians chapter 5, Galatians chapter 5 and verse 9, Paul said this as well, "A little leaven leavens the whole lump." Now, a little bit later in this chapter, we are shown what we're really up against, and I'll get into that in a little bit, but I wanted to give the brief outline of where we go in the Bible to, from the Old Testament to the New Testament, to see these important types and to see that sin is amplified from just the obvious expression of wrongdoing to even what takes place in the mind that may not ever be acted upon. And then in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, we are given this instruction that we go through every year as to what is required of us as a people. 1 Corinthians 11 and in verse 28. "But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread," that is, the unleavened bread that is present at the Passover. "So let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup," the symbols of the Passover that were instituted by Christ on that last Passover. "For he that eats and drinks unworthily eats and drinks damnation to himself, not discerning the Lord's body." So the process that I spoke of at the beginning is something that we are commanded to do every year prior to the Passover season and during the Passover season. And we are really supposed to examine ourselves at all times. But coming up to this important anniversary, the anniversary of the death of our Lord and Savior, we are asked and we are told to examine ourselves. Verse 30, "For this cause many are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep. For if we would judge ourselves, we should not be judged." So it's self-examination. So we're given some positive commands to think about and consider prior to that time. Self-examination, self-judgment is a necessary requirement of Christians. And it involves some time and considerable help from a biblical perspective. You know, the Bible is a discerner of the heart and the mind. It's like a two-edged sword, as it says in Hebrews. It investigates us and helps us to understand who and what we are. But we are given the physical type of putting leaven out of our homes, just as in the Old Testament, to go through this spiritual process of examination. So there's no right answer to this question. All right, well, maybe there is. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being presumptuous. Maybe there's no wrong answer to this question. But I'll leave it to you. And you should leave the answer to yourself and come to the answer in your own prayerful way with God as to what is appropriate and what is going overboard and what might be just the right balance. You haven't heard the question yet. How much time should you spend in cleaning leaven out? Don't answer. I don't want to know. And don't make me responsible for, you know, fulfilling what you think is the right amount of time. Should you start a month ahead of time and work for a solid month? That seems to be a little overboard to me. Should it take a week? Maybe you're just really slow. Should you take 5 minutes? Should it be a day? Should it be a special day, like a Sunday before the Days of Unleavened Bread, circled on your calendar, and you're going to spend that entire day cleaning leaven out of your abode, doing what you think is appropriate? So you see that is left up to you and your judgment, because you can't go into the Bible and find a time period to dictate to you how long you should spend in this endeavor. I've known people that have spent a long time and were very careful to get every bit of leaven out of their homes. I think I've told you this story before, that I was a ministerial trainee, and the minister that I was working with was a really great person. And about a month after the Days of Unleavened Bread were finished, I think he had a flat tire or something. That was back in the days when they had a full spare in the trunk. You know, cars were big. Trunks were big. The great 70s. He had a Chrysler Cordoba. Remember Ricardo Montalban? With the Corinthian leather. You remember those days? Big old spare tire. So we went to change his spare tire, and the bottom of that tire well was an old sandwich. I think he was probably pretty diligent in cleaning. Where do we go to clean? You probably go where we think leaven is, right? And it's not in my closet in my house. I don't really eat sandwiches or take food in there. It usually starts in the kitchen of all things, right? I mean, that's where most normal people keep leaven. And, you know, then sometimes there are the things that are obviously leaven that you overlook. It's a process. It can be kind of funny. You know, maybe it teaches us some physical, spiritual lessons. And I've seen, you know, going overboard. Here's one for you. People throwing out bird seed because they thought they saw leaven in the ingredients of bird seed. Big old bag, 50-pound bag of bird seed. Get rid of it, you know. The Days of Unleavened Bird Seed. You take some of that seed and millet and make bread out of it, right?
Yeah, sure, sure.
You want the most ghastly tasting bread of your entire life? Oh. So I'm not sure what you'll come up with, but I'm sure if you pray about it, you'll hit the right balance. And I think that's there are a lot of things that are left up to us and our freedom of choice and our own thought process and the division of duties. If you're married, husband and wife, 90% goes to Terry. She does 90% and 10%. So however you divide up those responsibilities is left up to you, and that's your choice. I will say that I'm not going to put a time limit. I can't. I mean, it's like telling people how long they should pray. We used to have those standards. If you really wanted to just stay even spiritually, half hour. Mr. LaRavia, I know you're listening in. Remember those days? That's when we first came into the church. Half hour a day to stay on a level playing field. But if you really wanted to become more spiritual, you'd pray at least an hour a day. We don't do that anymore. We don't tell people how often they should pray or how long they should study the Bible. I remember trying to fulfill some artificial time period and falling asleep actually reading the Bible. Not sure that last 5 minutes did me much good at all. But the process of spiritual example or spiritual examination, I'll put to you, should take longer than the physical cleaning that takes place in your house. Okay? I mean, I'm not going to dictate, and the Bible doesn't dictate, so far be it from me to dictate how long you should clean out the leaven from your home. The thing is, most people come to this knowledge, it's really an impossibility to get every bit of leaven out. I mean, you're not living a normal life during the rest of the year if you can get every bit of leaven out of your home. Because there are microscopic spores in the air of leaven that you'll... I don't care what kind of venting system you have with your furnace or air conditioner, you're not going to get rid of it all. It's there. So we don't go to the other extreme and say, well, we can't get all of it, so we may as well just forget about it. You know, it's not worthy of trying. So, but I would just put it before you that probably... the time spent in researching your time would be better spent researching you and your own mind and looking for sin there rather than looking for physical leaven. That's the only instruction I would give to anybody. So you determine how long that process should be, because none of us are perfect, and that's a given. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, and that is a given. And the penalty for that sin is death, and that's a given. We have the sacrifice of Jesus Christ that covers all of that, and that is a given as well. But we are told to examine ourselves, and then in a very positive way, partake of those symbols. And so when we come to the Passover, you can come positive. And then that's another thing that we should probably mention here. Let's strike a balance. On the evening of the Passover, it's a time of reflection. It's a time in which we will get together. It is not a normal Sabbath day. It's not a Sabbath. It's not a normal time of backslapping, handshaking, fellowshipping like we do on every other day of the year. It's a time for quiet reflection, really. Let's not forget to smile at the same time. It is a hopeful event. It is a hopeful time as well. The sacrifice has been paid. The sacrifice has been accomplished. It's all done. That aspect has been done for us. We have our participation. But let's just be mindful of the solemnity of the service at the same time. We should remember that. So sometimes we've had difficulty finding that balance, but it's not time for gabbing. It's not a time just be silent totally either. You don't have to just whisper, but when you come into that room and you sit down and you're ready for the service to begin, then your attention is there. on the service and the things that Mr. Tannert will be saying that night. We'll be in El Paso. As human beings, as Christians, as members of the Church of God, we're up against some very, very powerful forces, and some of the most powerful forces are our own human nature. And what do I mean by that? Paul explains this in Romans chapter 7. Let's turn there. I think we can all sympathize, or we can all relate to what Paul is saying here and how he is expressing even our own thoughts about life and about overcoming, and how it's really not that easy when you think about things that are taking place in your mind and the things that other people blurt out and say, and yet you may have had a little bit more discretion not to say it, but you still thought it and you know that it's wrong. Paul says in verse 14, "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, physical, sold under sin. For what I am doing, I do not understand. For what I will to do, that I do not practice. But what I hate, that I do." Now, just being honest, we could all say that about ourselves. "If then I do what I will not to do, I agree with the law that it is good. But now it is no longer I who do it, but the sin that dwells in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good I do not find. For the good that I will do, I do not. But the evil I will not to do, that I practice. Now if I do what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but the sin that dwells in me. I find then a law that evil is present within me." There's this battle, there's this contention that is taking place in the mind. "For I delight in the law of God according to the inward man, but I see another law in my members warring against the law of my mind and bringing me into captivity in the law of sin which is in my members. O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death?" Do you think the Apostle Paul took his own advice in 1 Corinthians and said, you know, that he, you know, it appears that he did examine himself on a regular basis? We don't know what he's describing here, but it's very likely something that he touches upon in Galatians 5. So we'll go back there now. Galatians chapter 5. And verse 18. "I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh." That's what he was talking about in Romans. It's not easy to do. "For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary to one another, so that you do not do the things that you wish. But if you're led by the Spirit, you're not under the law," or that is the penalty of the law, which demands the death penalty. Now, this is interesting. We could all agree on these outward and obvious manifestations of sin. And this is what was the essence of Christ's teaching in Matthew 5, right? "The works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness." And then, idolatry, sorcery. Those are easily identifiable sins against God and His law. When you come down to the next few, the next eight, works of the flesh, they are works of the flesh, and they're identified as works of the flesh that are every bit as heinous as the previous ones, but we don't always associate them with the outward manifestation of sin are the works of the flesh. But they're called works of the flesh because they take place within the flesh, our fleshly minds. Hatred. Lost my place, sorry. Hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in times past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. The antidote, of course, is the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness. Don't mean to just blur over these and fast forward, but it says, those who are Christ's, in verse 24, have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. And that's the challenge that we all have. And you'll find that in the Passover seasons that are mentioned in the New Testament, you'll find all of these various works of the flesh that take place in the mind. And they're works of the flesh. And they're illustrated for us in every, in when you consider all of them, and we'll go through a few of the instances of the Passover season, you'll see these amplified. We don't always recognize them because they're under the surface, but here are the outward manifestations of these tendencies of humankind. In John chapter 11, and in verse 45, this is one of the Passover seasons that is mentioned. John 11 and verse 45. Then one of the lawyers answered and said to him, "Teacher, by saying these things, you reproach us also." Pardon me. Am I in the right spot here? Oh. Duh. The right chapter and verse. The wrong book. John 11 and verse 45. Then many of the Jews who had come to Mary and had seen the things Jesus did believed in him. But some of them went away to the Pharisees and told them the things Jesus did. Obviously, they didn't like him. That is hatred. Hatred and dissensions. A disagreement. Dissension is a disagreement or difference of opinion, especially when leading to open conflict. And this did. Verse 47. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered a council and said, "What shall we do? For this man works many signs. And if we let him alone like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation." They were able to see the truth. They were able to evaluate the miracles. They could not deny them. But you see selfish ambitions, and you see jealousies, and you see envy all coming to the fore. And these are the manifestations. The contention, angry disagreement. Rivalry, competition among opponents. And one of them, Caiaphas, being high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all, nor do you consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and not that the whole nation should perish." But this he did not say in his own authority, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation. And not for that nation also, but also that he would gather together in one the children of God who were scattered abroad. Then from that day on, they plotted to put him to death. Not a good thing. Therefore, Jesus no longer walked openly among the Jews, but went from there into the country near the wilderness to a city called Ephraim, and there remained with his disciples. And the Passover of the Jews was near, and many went from the country up to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. Then they sought Jesus and spoke among themselves as they stood in the temple, "What do you think, that he will not come to the feast?" Now both the chief priests and the Pharisees had given a command that if anyone knew where he was, he should report it, that they might seize him. 2,000 years later, we can evaluate exactly what was going on in the minds of these despicable human beings, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, who are really typical of all of us and all of mankind in the way that they act, and their jealousies, their hatred, their ambitions, and we see the results of their thought process that they probably thought was being hidden from others. In John chapter 6 and in verse 60, Christ told his disciples at that time some very difficult things that they could not comprehend and they did not understand. In verse 60 of John 6, therefore many of his disciples, when they heard this saying, said, "This is a hard saying. Who can understand it?" Backing up just a little bit, verse 57, "As the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so he who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread which came down from heaven, not as your fathers ate the manna and are dead. He who eats this bread will live forever." They didn't understand it. In verse 61, when Jesus knew in himself that his disciples complained about this, he said to them, "Does this offend you? What then, if you should see the Son of Man ascend where he was before? It is the Spirit which gives life. The flesh profits nothing. The words that I speak to you are spirit, and they are life. But there are some of you here who do not believe." For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were who did not believe and who would betray him. And he said, "Therefore I have said to you that no man can come to me unless he has been granted to him by my Father." From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him, or with him no more. They couldn't believe it. They were offended. And 2,000 years later, in all of us, we have the same potential. And part of our honest self-examination will point that out to us. Turn to Luke chapter 22 and verse 47. The example of Christ being taken away to be tried. Luke 22 and verse 47. The point, I think, in this example and other examples is that human behavior and hatred, anger, jealousies, wrath, outbursts, can get so out of control that the lesson can be lost that is so evident and right out in plain sight. While he was still speaking, behold a multitude, and he who is called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near to Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said to him, "Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?" When those around him saw what was going to happen, they said to him, "Lord, shall we strike with a sword?" And one of them struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. An outburst of wrath. And Jesus answered and said, "Permit even this." And he touched his ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to the chief priests, captains of the temple, and the elders who had come to him, "Have you come out as a robber with swords and clubs, as against a robber with swords and clubs? When I was with you daily in the temple, you did not try to seize me, but this is your hour in the power of darkness." What should have happened was that a miracle occurred and Jesus should have been released. Oh, we're wrong. We got the wrong guy this time, or whatever. It should have dawned on them, but it shows the power of human nature and jealousies. An outburst of wrath. One of the disciples of Christ was guilty of that as well. Human behavior is shown at its worst. But if we're all honest with ourselves, we recognize there have all been times in our lives when we have been subject to these emotions as well. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 10. Now I plead with you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all speak the same thing, that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. That is the goal of our calling. That is one of the goals of our calling, that we would have the mind of Jesus Christ and that would direct us. And so we're given this time, and you have the opportunity to develop the mind of Christ, to come to the same mind as Jesus Christ, and come to the point in which there is unity in the body of Christ. That is our goal collectively as individuals. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, this was obviously a problem for that particular area of the world. Paul mentions in 11, first of all, when you come together as a church, I hear that there are divisions among you, and in part I believe it. For there must be factions among you, that those who are approved may be recognized among you. This is an area in which self-examination is very, very important for us to understand the importance of unity among the people of God. And so we're given this time in preparation, and how you set aside that time is really up to you. But please do set aside some time for thoughtful reflection, prayer, study, self-examination, investigation, and see where it leads. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with seeing progress as well. I hope that you do. You see some progress, little by little, year by year, maybe some baby steps, time to rejoice in some small victories, some overcoming as well. You've all done that as well, and you should be happy of what God has accomplished in you and positive about the future. And not woe is me, but because without God, it's woe is me. But with God and Christ directing the incisive self-examination, we'll all be victors in the end. So take some time to examine yourself prior to this Passover and ask God to help you see any of these hidden or undercover, maybe even secret sins, so that we can all truly rejoice in the unleavened bread of righteousness and truth.